WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
What is up, beautiful people? Happy, happy Friday. That is right. You have made it. The end of the week is here, and the weekend is upon us. Can you believe that? Time flies when you're having fun, and we certainly have been having a ton of fun here on the WKAR airwaves throughout this week here on the show. And today is, yeah, speaks to that true in form, without a doubt, folks. We're going to have a lot of fun on today's show as we will chat about the Detroit Tigers. That's right, baseball in January, say it ain't so. Are you kidding me? That's right. But the Detroit Tigers winter caravan was in Lansing yesterday, actually at the new headquarters of the Lansing State Journal. Isaac and myself, we were invited out to the new headquarters to attend the Associated Press sports meeting in which the Tigers caravan pulled on right up, and we got a chance to talk with many Detroit Tigers players. You'll get to hear from one of them who was an absolute media darling yesterday. His name is Cameron Maben. You do not want to miss that. We will also chat about the NBA All-Star starters that were announced last night on TNT and give you our thoughts on whether or not the fans got it right. In my opinion, they get it wrong every single year, but I'll save my rant for later, okay? And we'll also give you a preview of the Michigan State men's basketball game as they take on Maryland tomorrow evening. And guess what, folks? We'll be giving away a pair of tickets to check out Michigan State take on Maryland. Find out how you can win those tickets in just a second. Again, our phone lines are open, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Let's hit you now with our current sports quick hit headliners. Michael Lynn III, a sophomore quarterback who was one of the area's top passers while playing at Sexton last fall, he has decided to transfer to Lansing Catholic. At Lansing Catholic, Lynn will try to be the latest in the line of college quarterbacks produced by Cougars coach Jim Ahern. Cooper Rush and Tony Poljan are both recent record-setting QBs groomed by Ahern. Rush has been CMU's starting quarterback the last 3 years, while Poljan recently verbally committed to the Chippewas after a decorated career with the Cougs. The Michigan State hockey team will play the U.S. National Team Development Program U18 squad at Munn Ice Arena tomorrow in exhibition play. Puck drop is set for 3 p.m. MSU topped the USNTBP U18's team 4-1 in last year's meeting and is 5-6 all-time against the program. Anthony Davis, he scored 32 points last night to lead the New Orleans Pelicans over the Detroit Pistons 115-99 the final. This is the fourth win in 5 games for the Pels. Andre Drummond had 19 points and 22 rebounds for the D, while Kentavious Caldwell-Pope scored 23 and Brandon Jennings tossed up 20. The Pistons will now visit Denver tomorrow. The Los Angeles Lakers star Kobe Bryant is an all-star for the 18th time. And Golden State Warriors forward Draymond Green is notably not among the West starting five. Fans overwhelmingly chose Bryant to be an all-star starter, voting him almost 1.9 million times. Again, 1.9 million times. That's a lot of votes, folks. The most among all players, Bryant will start alongside Warriors guard Steph Curry, Oklahoma City Thunder guard Russell Westbrook, Thunder swing man Kevin Durant, and San Antonio Spurs wing Kawhi Leonard. In the East, the starters look like this. Cleveland Cavaliers forward LeBron James, Indiana Pacers forward Paul George, New York Knicks forward Carmelo Anthony, Toronto Raptors guard Kyle Lowry, and guard for the Miami Heat Dwayne Wade. James was the top fan choice for the East with 1.1 million votes. That's also a lot of votes. All right, the Houston Rockets on Friday have acquired Josh Smith. That's right, former Detroit Pistons player as well, in a trade with the Los Angeles Clippers. Rockets GM Daryl Morey confirmed that news on Twitter. The Rockets sent the draft rights to foreign players Marty Lewin and Sheree Lushik to the Clippers for Smith. Now, the Clippers will also send cash back to Houston to cover the balance of Smith's salary, according to Yahoo Sports, which was the first to report the trade. The Detroit Red Wings, they will try to shake off a two-game losing streak when they hit the road to take on the Buffalo Sabres tonight at 7 p.m. Now, the Detroit Red Wings have won two of three games against the Sabres this year. An annual baseball tradition returned to Michigan yesterday and will continue today. The Detroit Tigers winter caravan kicked off at multiple spots across the state, a reminder that pitchers and catchers will report for spring training in Florida. And get this, less than a month. Are you kidding me? The caravan even made a stop at the new location, as I mentioned, of the Lansing State Journal, downtown Lansing. And Current Sports was in the his house. We'll have coverage from that in just a sec. And last but not least, a very disturbing story. Daniel Holdsclaw, a former Eastern Michigan standout linebacker and Oklahoma City police officer, convicted of raping four women and sexually assaulting several others while he was on duty. He was sentenced today, well, I should say yesterday, to 263 consecutive years in prison, the maximum allowed sentence. Now, in December, an Oklahoma City jury found Holdsclaw guilty of 18 of 36 charges of sexual assault, including rape. The sentence was given by District Judge Timothy Henderson and came after victims told the court Thursday that the former officer had destroyed their lives. All right, folks, well, that wraps up your Current Sports Quick Hit Headliners. Our phone lines are open. Call in to be a part of the show, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Time to start the show.
Kobe trying to move around Mopee, trying to put him up, finally shoots, counted in the foul. Decides to go up with him, hits him on the arm. Here's Kobe again, yes sir! Kobe all the way, reverse layup is good. Knocked away by Kobe, great hustle by Kobe. He's gonna score. Slam dunk, Lakers lead. Oh, great pass, Kobe alone, slam dunk.
We're all geared for you, but he's void of all the time. Nobody helping right now defensively, so he'll take the 15-footer.
Kobe counted foul. Kobe goes straight to the dribble in the lane, lay it up and in. Kobe with it now. Lakers lead 105-96. Another three. Four away from Elgin Baylor's Laker record. For three again. Yes!
Well, they're 70.
Pump fake for two. Kobe stopped the Laker record. I see your point, though. Kobe down the middle, throw it in. Second, 27 in the third.
I see it. Here's number one.
Do you believe it? This one would be to tie Wilt for number two, and the next one would be to pass. For the night, at least. Brown for 80. This would be 18 for 20 from the line, and an 81-point game. 55 in the second half. Ladies and gentlemen, you have witnessed the second greatest scoring performance in NBA history.
Welcome to WKAR's Current Sports. How are you doing on this beautiful Friday? What's up, people? We've got a great show to close out your week. What you just heard was, of course, a moment that I can't believe happened on this day 10 years ago. On this day 10 years ago, Kobe Bean Bryant. He scored 81 points in a game against the Toronto Raptors, the second most in one game in NBA history. Oh, my goodness. And you know what? That 81-point game was a part of a January in which Bryant, folks, he averaged, get this, 43.4 points in 16 games. The only player in NBA history to average more points in 1 month is Wilt the Still Chamberlain, who did it, yeah, seven times. Crazy, right? A minimum of 10 games, though, back then. Unbelievable stuff. And you know what? We all, you know, those sports fans out there, like, you know, like all of us. I mean, we all have those moments in sports in which we recount, in which we'll never forget where we were when it happened. And, of course, this is one of those performances, folks. I remember I was sitting back watching. I remember it vividly, too. Vividly. It was late at night, and it was a weekend. I want to say it was a Saturday. I have to look that up. It was a weekend, though, because I remember I was up late. I didn't have to go to school the next morning. And it was either a Friday night or a Saturday. I can't remember. But anyway, I remember in my room, you know, living on the west side of Detroit off of Ashton Street. I remember this so vividly. I was sitting back watching the movie Hustle and Flow. I was alone in my room watching that. I wasn't even watching sports at the time. But I was watching the movie Hustle and Flow, of course, acclaimed actor Terrence Howard, Taraji P. Henson. Great movie, right? And I remember watching it, and I paused the movie just to, you know, flip over to ESPN Sports Center to see what was going on. And there was a late NBA game on ESPN at the time. And I looked down at the ticker board, and what do I see? I see, you know, Kobe Bryant, you know, sets NBA record 81 points against the Raptors. And I had to do a double take because I didn't believe it. And then as soon as I read it, I remember my stepdad, he runs into my room and says, did you see what Kobe just did? And I'm like, is that real? Is that a typo? I questioned it at first. I mean, 81 points in one game? I mean, that's hard to fathom. I mean, we always bring up, of course, Wilt Chamberlain's 100 in one game, which, you know, there's no video of, but he did score 100 points in a game. And I can only imagine what that moment was like, being there and seeing that visually. I mean, triple digits, are you kidding me? But 81? I mean, that's 19 short of what Wilt did. So I sat back, and I'm sitting there as I watch it again, and my stepdad runs into the room. I'm like, no, that didn't just happen, right? There's got to be something wrong with that. That's not true. That's not real. The next thing you know, during the NBA broadcast, the broadcasters who are currently broadcasting whatever irrelevant game was on that night, they say, you know what, folks? We have some breaking news. Kobe Bryant has just set a record for the second greatest scoring performance in NBA history, scoring 81 points over the Toronto Raptors. And then it became real. And then I looked at my phone, and I hadn't realized that my phone had actually given me a notification of what Kobe Bryant was doing that night. And it wasn't until after that game that they were broadcasting on ESPN, in which they started to show the highlights of how Kobe, you know, how he did it, how he scored 81 points. He was 28 of 46 from the field. He was 7 of 13 from the three-point line. He was 18 of 20 from the free throw line. And in the first half, he had 26. Second half, he had 55. And get this, kind of a cool connection to Michigan State here, right? They've actually broken down, you know, shot by shot. As you just heard, even at that montage, if you like YouTube, Kobe Bryant, 81 points, you can watch point by point, free throw after free throw, moment after moment of Kobe climbing to that 81-point peak. But when looking at they had broken down, by possession, who was guarding Kobe. And Morris Peterson, Michigan State great, his number and his name, of course, hangs above the Breslin Center Raptors. Morris Peterson, who was a part of that Toronto Raptors team, he guarded Kobe 24 possessions, which is the most out of anyone on the court that night. Jalen Rose guarded him 20 possessions, and Joey Graham guarded him 10 possessions. And I actually, you know, when we had Mo Pete on the show the first time, I asked him about what it was like to defend Kobe during that moment and what it was like, you know, being there. And he just said it was kind of a pinch me moment for me. I just couldn't believe what was happening. So just an unbelievable moment that we will never forget. 81 points on this day, 10 years ago, I will never, ever forget where I was. And I didn't even finish the Hustle and Flow movie, right? I ended up watching it the next day. A great movie, by the way. But, yeah, that's one of those moments that certainly will go down in sports lore. And I actually see on the Players Tribune, which is a very cool forum that Derek Jeter started, in which players actually write articles about their experiences in the league. They actually have an article, I don't think written by Kobe. I have to look that up. But I saw it was just entitled 81. Don't know who wrote it. But it recounts that moment as well. But I want to know, where were you during that moment? I mean, Kobe, 81. Call in 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Isaac, where were you? First off, how old were you when Kobe put up that unbelievable historic performance? Because I was 15. You had to be around, what, like 12?
I was 9.
9?
That was 10 years ago than I was 9. So, you know, as sad as it is, I can't remember exactly where I was. I remember watching the SportsCenter highlights at my house. I remember watching those either the following morning or that night. But I can't remember what I was doing for the actual game because I didn't have a cell phone. I didn't have anything. I was probably sitting back, maybe watching Hustle and Grind just like you. Who knows? But nobody came in and interrupted me.
Hold on. Have you ever seen Hustle and Flow?
No, I have not.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, you just mispronounced the name. You got to check that movie out, Isaac. You have to check that movie out. Well, this is coming from a man who hasn't seen Rocky, but that's a whole other conversation. But proceed.
But, oh, yeah, I remember that performance so well. And I think Kobe Bryant is the best impossible shot maker of all time in the NBA. And by that, I mean, Mo Peterson, you can guard him for 24 possessions and play lockdown defense, and he'll put up 50 on you. I mean, that's just how Kobe Bean Bryant goes. When he's in the groove, and you saw him some this year, he just flashes back to his old self, his former self, against the Nets and against maybe the Raptors. I'm trying to remember, but I've seen a decent bit of Kobe Bryant games this year because, of course, it's his farewell going away tour. So, Kobe Bryant, I'll just never forget some of the shots that he hit. I remember a specific shot against the Raptors in which he was double-teamed in a corner and shot for three over two defenders. Shot clock was not even winding down. Plenty of time left, 8 seconds, and he just turns a fadeaway three into buckets.
He was just feeling it, man. He was just in one of those zones. Have you ever been, because you and I both played high school hoops, and you've duly noted that, of course, during your high school career, Isaac, I mean, you were on the bench, but you came in, you were that kind of like that six man off the bench to provide your team with energy. I've been in one of those zones when I was in high school. I never forget, it was my only 30-plus point game in high school, but I'll never forget it. This was a JV game, actually. I was playing JV basketball at Annapolis High School in Dearborn Heights, Michigan. I'll never forget it. We were playing Edsel Ford at their house. We ended up losing the game, but it was one of those things that I was just hot. I just couldn't miss Isaac, and I remember one specific shot because my energy started to feed off my teammates because I started getting really hyped up, man, and I remember I had one shot in which, you know, they threw me the ball. I remember actually two shots that come to mind. One shot, they threw me the ball in the left corner near the baseline. And two Edsel Ford defenders come at me, and I'm just feeling it. I've hit like two straight prior to that. I throw it up, nothing but the bottom. And I remember my teammate, Austin Malia. Shout out to Austin. I saw him not too long ago. He lives in Chicago now. But Austin, like, lost his mind, and he almost got teed up. I didn't even go crazy. He, like, goes nuts. Then he came down on the ensuing possession and hit a three, and he was like, man, Al, you started motivating me out there. And there was one shot I remember, too, and I should have not have taken it, but I was feeling it, Isaac. I had the ball at the top of the key, but to the left, and I dribble drove to my right, and I threw up, like, this running floater from the free throw line, and it was nothing but the bottom. And it was at that moment I just knew that I was just feeling it. But, this is one of those zones, Kobe's greater than mine, obviously, that, you know, he just couldn't miss. It didn't matter where he shot from. Didn't matter how many guys you threw at him to guard him. Kobe Bryant, the basketball was like the Pacific Ocean to him.
And what's really unbelievable about that is, first off, you just think the talent gap between Kobe and everybody else. But imagine Kobe in high school. If that was you in high school, imagine Kobe Bryant, because, of course, he went to Lower Merion High School in Philadelphia. Imagine him in one of those zones in high school. I'd love to know his high score in high school, just how much he put up on what poor defender was guarding him. I'm not sure if you've ever seen his high school highlights, but one stands out to me in which he puts the ball between the defender's legs and then tips it back behind them. The defender turns around and he hits a shot with the defender facing the other way.
No, that sounds exactly like my moment I was telling you about Lindsey Hunter.
Oh, I remember this moment.
That's like the exact thing that happened to me against Lindsey Hunter at a rec game 2 years ago. So that's crazy stuff, though, man. But Kobe Bryant, salute to the man. 81 points 10 years ago to this day. And again, as I announced in our Quick Hit Headliners, he has been named as a Western Conference All-Star for the 18th time. Very fitting. Very, very fitting. Folks, our phone lines are open. Call in 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. We are giving away a pair of tickets to tomorrow evening's Michigan State, Maryland college basketball game. College game day will be in the house, and I'm privileged to be a part of that that broadcast, kind of in a way, because I will be your host. Your crowd MC, I guess you can say, your crowd MC before the broadcast begins around 11 o'clock. So I have to wake up early. I mean, I haven't woken up at 7:30 in so long, but I have to be there by 8. So for those who are showing up to the ESPN College Game Day taping, I look forward to seeing your pearly whites early, bright and early tomorrow. But this is our trivia question because, again, we make you earn those tickets here on the show. We give away tickets to each and every MSU men's and women's basketball game. This is the question, and we want to center it on current sports TV. I want you guys to name the two other guests that we've had on current sports TV other than Jarrett Walker of Aim High Sports, who was on our airwaves last night. Who were the two other guests on current sports TV for the month of January, this month? If you know the answer, call in and you will win tickets to check out the Spartans versus the Terrapins tomorrow evening. Call in 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. That is the number if you want to win those tickets. In the meantime, let's talk baseball. Yeah, folks, it's January 22nd to be exact. And the reason why we're talking baseball on today's show is because a very cool moment occurred right here in Lansing yesterday at the Lansing State Journal new headquarters. Very beautiful building of the Lansing State Journal moving to a new location downtown. And there was an Associated Press sports meeting in which Isaac and myself were invited to come out and partake in. We got the invitation from Larry Leitch, who's a sports writer, an MSU alum, for the Associated Press. It was a fantastic, fantastic day. As soon as we got off the airwaves, we jetted down there as they had a storytelling meeting, tips and tricks, earlier in the day. And we couldn't arrive at that because that happened in the morning sometime, and that bled over into the afternoon. Of course, we were on the airwaves. But afterwards, we showed up just in time to see the Detroit Tigers Winter Caravan bus pull up in front of the new LSJ headquarters building. And then we walked in. I mean, everyone was spread around at different tables. And you could talk to, you know, the Detroit Tigers who are part of this year's Winter Caravan. And there was one player in particular that Isaac and myself, I mean, we really became instant fans of because he was such a well-spoken individual and was so excited about the start of a new baseball year for the Tigers. And who we're talking about is Cameron Maben. Cameron Maben. And, you know, you noted, Isaac, how Cameron was sitting in there and you were looking around at how the guys, you know, just looking at their swag. You know, who had the most swag in the room? Yeah. And it was really no competition. Cameron Maben had on, like, a burgundy suit with this beautiful tie. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was just funky fresh, wasn't he?
Oh, yeah. He decked out for the occasion. You can tell everybody there was invested in it and cared about it. Really, props to the Tigers for putting this on, putting so much effort in it. But there is such a thing as doing 110% and going above and beyond. And Cameron Maben certainly did that. He was so personable, so friendly. And I told you after, I remember playing MLB baseball 08 or something like that, and having Cameron Maben on some of my franchises as a prospect who later became one of the best center fielders in the game. First off, not a bad prediction by those video games, but also it was cool seeing him in person and having him be as personable as he was and as charismatic as he was. It was just great talking to the guy.
Yeah, and we also chatted with, of course, general manager of the Detroit Tigers, Al Avila. Just a lot of players, which we'll get to later on. But I want to play Maimon's interview because he was certainly the most intriguing guy to talk to, in my opinion, in the room when it concerns the players. And of course, Cameron Maimon, he's played with the Florida Marlins, the San Diego Padres, most recently the Atlanta Braves. And on November 20th of last year, the Braves traded Maimon to the Detroit Tigers in exchange for Ian Kroll and Gabe Spire. And here is how the conversation went with Cameron Maimon. Enjoy this one, folks.
Talk about what the excitement is for you guys to be on the brink of another year and the expectations to be, you know, World Series or bust, really.
You know, that's a great question. I told somebody earlier, you know, it seems like the fans and the media are really, really giddy and excited, but it's like, you know, the players, we feel the same buzz. You know, we feel that same excitement and energy, you know, coming together today for the first time. You can really see the look on guys' faces about, you know, how excited, you know, we are about some of the moves that this organization has made. And, you know, you can feel it, man. On paper, this is, you know, arguably one of the best teams in the game right now. And I think we're just excited to get on the field and get it rolling. You know, I just keep saying, barring any unforeseen injuries, this team has an opportunity to be one of the best, you know, in the game this year, man. And it's going to be fun, you know, a fun opportunity to go out and see what we can do together as we create that that chemistry and gel together.
Being on the Winter Caravan, of course, is a prime opportunity for you all to bond and to strengthen that chemistry that you not only show on the field but off of it as well. How important is this part of the year before the real season starts?
You know, it really is huge, especially for guys like myself coming back to organization. You know, looking at the roster as soon as you get traded, going down, trying to figure out who you know, who you don't know. Because that's huge. You know, you always want to be comfortable and show up and not rub anybody the wrong way. And you want to feel welcome. You know, it's been easy to do that. You know, being only here for a few hours today, it seems like each and every guy, you know, makes a point to speak to you first, you know, and that goes a long way, you know, when you're coming up on an eighth-month season and you got to be around guys every day. You know, you want to build that chemistry, that trust in each other so that, you know, when it's time to go out there and play together and leave it all online, you can count on each other. You trust that the next guy beside you is going to have your back. So, you know, moments like this is huge, man. And not only is it huge for us to come together, but give back too, man. You know, this is huge for the fans. The fans deserve to know that we care, that we care about, you know, how they feel. You know, we heard that it got a little ugly there at the end, but we want them to know that we're back to keep fighting, you know what I mean? And the good thing about this organization is they don't rebuild for the future. They rebuild to win right now, you know, and that's the beauty of, you know, being 28 years old and coming back here is, I know I'm coming to an organization that they're trying to do something special this year. And, you know, it bodes well for leaving it all out on the field and giving it everything you have for a team who are putting together a team to do just that, and that's trying to win it all.
Cameron, if there was a move that certainly spoke to that win now mentality, it was, of course, the news that Justin Upton will be a part of this ball club this upcoming year. I got to know, what was the reaction amongst you all, and how does he improve this team?
Well, you know, I think before it actually went official, you know, I actually spoke to him.
You did.
So, you know, me and Justin, we've been friends for a while, and, you know, from about 11 years old to now, we played against each other through competition. And, you know, getting a guy like that, what people don't see is the kind of work that he puts in, you know, off the field. And I had an opportunity this past spring with San Diego to just see how serious he takes his craft. You know, there's no mistake on why he is the player he is, and he was able to, you know, sign a deal that he signed, and deservedly so, because the guy off the field is just as good as just as dedicated as he is on the field, man. And you know, it bodes well to have another leader like that. You know, I think, you know, at the professional level, you need more than one leader, and you look around this locker room and you have it. You know, you can't win with just one guy leading the team. You've got to have 25 leaders, and that's just one more leader we've added to this locker room. And You know, I'm excited. You know, you look around and you look at the lineup, you know, look around the diamond, and, you know, I don't think there's a spot on the field where we don't match up as good as anybody.
Right.
You know, from the lineup to the bullpen to the starters, there's a lot of good things going on right now. And, you know, we're just excited as the media and the fans are. You know, a lot of buzz, but we feel it too in the locker room. We do.
Now, elaborate on that relationship. You said you guys have grown up together since you've known us since 11 years old. Elaborate on that relationship.
We played AAU travel ball, and it always seemed as the two teams that ended up in the championship team was his team and against my team. So again, it was, you know, him being able to him. It had to be pretty even because I know I took home quite a fair share of my first place trophy. So I can't say it was against him every time, but quite a few times, you know, I was able to see just how good he's always been and how much talent he's always had. You know, being a year younger than myself, he's just always, you know, played at such a high level, man, and it's always came easy. So, you know, it's fun to see him still doing it, and, you know, it's fun to be able to do it beside him this year, man. I'm looking forward to it and just picking these guys' brain. I hope they don't get tired of me asking questions about, you know, how's this going to help me or how's that going to help me? Because, you know, when you play with guys like this, you know, you can only expect your game to elevate to another level. That's what better players do. They make guys around them better, and I'm excited about being here.
Now, Cameron, you already talked about the goal for this squad this year is to win a World Series. But for you individually, I mean, how do you want to grow as a player?
You know, I just want to grow off of what I did last year. You know, I had the most consistent year I had last year. Definitely want to stay on the field a little bit more. I think 148 games, I think I can do a little bit better than that. But again, I think, you know, talking to my father, we talked about the other day, I'm going to challenge myself to see how many times I can get on base and cross home plate for these guys, man, all these guys who do just that and drive runs in. You know, it's going to be a nice challenge to see, you know, how much havoc I can create on the base and just try to be a pest and a menace out there as I am. When I'm healthy, you know, good things usually happen. And when I'm on base, good things happen. So.
Was Cameron not fantastic or what? Again, that was one of the very many of our interviews profiling the Detroit Tigers. Again, the Detroit Tigers Winter Caravan in town in Lansing yesterday afternoon around 2:30-ish. They were here from about 2:30 to 3:30 as they talked to many media members from around the area and beyond. Cameron Maben, of course, he has played with the San Diego Padres, the Atlanta Braves, and he has now returned to Detroit. He was called up to the Detroit Tigers, remember, back in August 17th of 2007 and made his major league debut that day. Excited to see him play. He's a very, very, just a media darling. Fantastic. All right, folks. Well, let's move on again. We do have a caller on the line who believes that he does have the correct answer to win two tickets to check out the Michigan State men's basketball team as they take on Maryland tomorrow evening at the Breslin Center. We're going to get to him, and we'll have plenty of more discussion here on the show, as well as recap what occurred on Current Sports TV last night with my chat with Jarrett Walker from Aim High Sports. Don't go anywhere. Don't you do it. We'll be right back. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. All right, folks. Well, let's see if we can give away these tickets, right? The Michigan State men's basketball team, of course, takes on the Maryland Terrapins tomorrow evening. And again, folks, this is a game that's very, very important to this team. They are coming off back-to-back-to-back losses. Three straight losses for the MSU men's basketball squad. Melo Trimble comes to town. One of the I love watching Melo play. He's just a bona fide scorer, without a doubt. Maryland, of course, coming off an overtime win over Northwestern. College game day, ESPN's College Game Day will be in the house tomorrow. Going to be an exciting time, And you have the opportunity to be at that game because we are giving away a pair of tickets to that matchup. And I do believe we have an individual. His name is Steve from Jackson, who's going to give his try at today's trivia question, which is, other than, of course, Jarrett Walker from AIM High Sports, who was a part of Current Sports TV last night, who have been the other two guests on Current Sports TV that we have had in the month of January? Steve from Jackson, welcome to the show. How you doing, Steve?
All right.
My man, so what are the answers?
My answer is Julian Gonzalez and Edwin Baker.
My man. See how easy it is? Just like that. And Steve, you will be enjoying tomorrow evening's game. Who are you taking? I'm curious.
My brother.
Nice. That should be a fun time. All right, Steve. Well, I'm sure Isaac will get your information. Thanks a lot for the call, and you nailed that answer.
Thanks a lot, Al.
Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate that. All right. Just like that, folks. See how easy it is? That's all you got to do. You answer the trivia question correctly, and you get to enjoy some MSU basketball. Gotta love that. Congratulations to Steve. All right, well, moving along, let's talk about tomorrow evening's game. Again, this is one that is going to be a crucial one. A crucial one for this team. Michigan State, a squad in which has been challenged when it comes to their toughness by their head coach, Tom Izzo. They haven't been playing great defense, allowing just way too many points on the board and allowing respective teams' big-time players to score big-time points against them. This is a game in which Maryland, which was once ranked number 3 in the country, they have a bona fide scorer in Melo Trimble, a guy who I think is going to be possibly a lottery pick in this year's NBA draft. He can score, folks. Without a doubt. And there's a lot of question marks as to who is going to guard him to try and slow Melo down. A very critical game. Isaac, what are you expecting in this one?
I'm thinking that Michigan State and Maryland is just going to be a very close matchup. Of course, you mentioned that College Game Day is going to be there. It really adds to the drama and the allure of this game. But at the same time, you have to remember, this Maryland team has not necessarily looked as good as many people have expected throughout the season. The Michigan game, more so than any other, was kind of a representation of how they've been a little bit disappointing and how Melo Trimble may not have dominated how people expected. Of course, he only scored 2 points in that game. Mm-hmm. However, I think Michigan State could have some serious problems with Maryland's perimeter attack, such as Rashid Suleiman, the transfer from Duke, and then Melo Trimble as well. So without Tum Tum Nairn, you saw how many problems that caused for Michigan State against Iowa and against Nebraska. And I think we'll see a similar scenario when Maryland comes to town.
Yeah, I guess if you want a recipe to try and slow down Melo Trimble, I guess you kind of look at that Michigan game, right? They were able to stymie Melo Trimble, to say the least. But again, the loss to Nebraska, one of the worst defensive performances in recent memory when talking about, you know, this Michigan State men's basketball team. I mean, they allowed Siobhan Shields to just go off. Siobhan Shields was simply amazing in that game. 28 points for him. But you know, if you want to beat Melo and Maryland, you have to beat the snake, you got to cut off his head. Simple as that. And Melo is certainly the head of that squad. And you got to get him in foul trouble. I think you know, whoever Melo is guarding on the court, you have to attack him to see if you can get some early fouls. Because if that happens and Melo is not out there playing, the best defense is for Melo to be sitting over there on that bench. So you got to get him in foul trouble. I think Denzel Valentine has to continue to do what Denzel Valentine does. He's got to be a scorer. He has to be a facilitator. And we have to see Bryn Forbes emerge from this shooting slump that he is currently in. I mentioned earlier this week when looking at the three recent losses for Michigan State during this tough stretch of basketball, Bryn Forbes has shot 3 of 15 from the three-point line. That can't happen. Bryn Forbes has to be the jelly to Denzel Valentine's peanut butter. Simple as that. He's got to come out there and it has to play efficiently. And again, looking at that Nebraska game, and it's something that we noted, Bryn Forbes, the shots that he had against Nebraska are shots that, you know, good looks, shots that he normally puts in the bucket. So it was very uncharacteristic for Bryn to shoot the way that he shot against Nebraska, let alone Iowa and Wisconsin. I think it ends tonight, though. I just got a feeling. I mean, Tom Izzo, you know, he's one of the best that we've ever seen in the college basketball realm. He knows how to motivate his players, and he made it a point to make sure the media knows that he has not lost this team. From an emotional standpoint, he has not lost this team. He knows how to motivate them. This team knows what they have to do. They have to do it. They just have to do a better job of executing it. And I think it starts with the defense. Michigan State can score. Despite Brent Forbes going in the shooting slump that he has gone on, other guys have stepped up. We saw Deontay Davis play efficiently down the stretch of that game. Matt Costello, I am worried about that ankle because it was a bad twist against Nebraska. You know, I actually looked at it again yesterday. I saw the broadcast of it, and my goodness, again, his ankle like hit the floor. I mean, really, really ugly injury. But it's an ankle injury nonetheless. It's not like it's broken. He is going to play, and I expect Matt Costello to still bring that energy and effort like he always does. And you know, on the flip side of it, when it comes to scoring, I think Aaron Harris, he's also been a shining light for this team. I think you can expect a big game from him tomorrow evening as well. At the end of the day, I think Michigan State wins this by double digits. Call me crazy, Isaac, but I think they win it by double digits, at least by 12 points.
Well, I'll call you crazy. You are crazy. How can Michigan State win this by double digits when they can't guard the perimeter, when they can't necessarily guard the post that well either? Deontay Davis isn't getting the same amount of blocks that he was tallying early in the season. And Maryland, I know they haven't been as good as I expected, including Mel Tremble, but they're still a good team. I mean, they, by far, 17-2, 6-1 in the Big Ten, they've outshone Michigan State by a good margin. Northwestern is a good team that they beat. And since the Michigan game, you and I talked about it, every team has their wake-up call, that splash of cold water in the face. And that Michigan game was that for Maryland. So although they've been disappointed since then, they blew out Ohio State, scored 100 on them, and then beat Northwestern. I just don't see Michigan State being able to play with these guys the entire game. Peter Yag, every time Michigan State's played a big guy, then they haven't been able to hang. So with Michigan State playing another star in Melo Tremple and Suleiman, I just don't think Michigan State's going to be able to handle both of those guys, and I think we'll see big games, 20-point explosion from both. I think Michigan State loses by 5 or 6. I think it will be close since it's in the Breslin Center and Michigan State's inspired, but I just can't see the Spartans pulling it together against Maryland. That wake-up call for the Spartans was a long time ago.
Maryland has shown a lot of vulnerability these last few weeks, Isaac. They beat I disagree with you. Northwestern is not a good basketball team. They're ninth in the Big Ten right now. They lost to Penn State, for goodness sake. Northwestern, they were able to push Maryland to overtime in that game and almost beat them.
Northwestern's 15-5, though.
And then, but still, ninth in the Big Ten.
I mean,
they've lost to Penn State. They've lost to Ohio State. And again, they pushed Maryland to overtime in that game, though.
Okay, but if you look at Maryland look at, beat Ohio State by 35.
If you look at that Michigan game, Maryland showed that if you stop Melo Tremble, which is easier said than done, but if you can slow him down, they don't have an immediate go-to guy. Now, granted, Michigan State has shown no signs of slowing down scores on respective teams, but if you can slow him down, and specifically slow him down by getting him into foul trouble, Michigan State can certainly push this team to the brink and beat them, without a doubt, Isaac.
But you're not just
Maryland
saying push to the brink
Maryland
and beat.
Is overrated.
You're saying double digits.
Maryland is, because I think at the end of the in I think it'll be close up until the fourth quarter, and they pull away late in the fourth quarter because they're. I just see how the ball is rolling there. But at the same time, I think that when you look at Maryland, there have been multiple instances that you can attack this team defensively. Maryland, I just don't think that Maryland is a good defensive team at the end of the day.
And I
think
either.
And I think that on the contrary, Michigan State has shown offensively they haven't slowed down. So I just think that at the end of this game, you're going to see Michigan State pull out to at least a 12-point victory.
See, in the second half, Michigan State, though, has not necessarily answered the call. Tom Izzo in the locker room is better than just about any coach
in
the
nation.
But
if Denzel Valentine hits that last shot against Wisconsin, and they pull out a close. If we don't forget here, Michigan State's not getting blown out in these losses. They lost to Wisconsin in the final seconds. They lost to Nebraska in the final seconds. If they pull out those games and execute down the stretch, we could be singing an entirely different song on
this
show.
But the only reason they were in it against Nebraska is because of a lucky banked in three by Denzel Valentine.
No, they were still in that game prior to that.
They
if he doesn't bang it in, we're still talking about a four-point game. Exactly. You know what I mean? So it's not like they were still getting blown. When I say talk about a blowout, I'm talking about double-digit deficits here. Michigan State, and again, they had the lead in the beginning portion of that second half. I just think at the end of the day, if they ramp up that defense, and Michigan State has shown, especially they started 13-0, and they've had some impressive wins, the best start in school history. If that defense comes to form, somewhat formed as that we saw at the very beginning of the year, they can beat Maryland and they can beat them by double digits.
But I think that glue for the defense is Tum Nair, and I think he's gone. He's not playing.
But there's other guys that are solid defenders on this team. They just haven't shown it. Matt McQuaid is a great defender. I think
great,
Matt McQuaid can get in the jersey of Melo Trimble, possibly
a good defender.
And possibly slow him down. I'm just saying, if Melo slows down, watch out. Michigan State will win this game. Point blank, period. Folks, what do you think? 15 minutes left in the show, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. All right, we'll let that talk cool down a little bit. Let's get to the current sports TV sit-down with Jarrett Walker from Aim High Sports. I got the chance to sit down with Jarrett. Remarkable young man. He actually went to Lansing Sexton High School, played football there under the tutelage of course, Dan Bogan. We all know how great of a high school football coach Dan Bogan is. And Jarrett was a part of the very first football team, I should say, because they were a club team before Jarrett got there. But he was a part of the very first NAIA College 1 ranked team ever in Siena Heights football history. Very cool stuff. Here's my chat with Jarrett Walker, just a snippet of it for you.
Thank you.
All right, first off, I want to talk about your close ties to the area. You were a Lansing Sexton graduate back in, I believe, 2011, right?
Correct.
And you played for Dan Bogan, certainly a staple in the community. We've had Coach Bogan on the show before. He has certainly built a very, very good high school football program that you actually played for, right?
Yep.
Talk about that. What was that like playing for Coach Bogan?
Playing with Coach Bogan, it was real intense, but he's like a real good father figure also, too. And Coach Bogan, he takes the game real serious, and playing for him is just, you wanna succeed for him. You wanna go out there and put your all out there.
He's definitely a player's coach, but he also knows when to tread that line of also being a disciplinary figure as well.
Correct.
When did you fall in love with the game of football?
I started playing football at the age of 6 for the Southside Panthers. And back then when I played, the starting age was 7, but my older brother played. And I just always wanted to be like him. So when I went to tryouts, I actually made the team, and they didn't know I was 6 until after I made the team.
So, really?
Correct.
So what's the stipulations with that? So you were 6 when you made the team. You have to be 7 to play?
Yep.
So
I actually turned 7 a week after. So everything was fine.
Everything was smooth.
But they probably wouldn't have let me try out if they hadn't known I was 6.
That's hilarious. So your brother played. What was his football career like? How far did he play? Did he go to college?
He played up until high school.
Okay. For Sexton, I'm assuming?
Yep.
Great stuff, man. Now, your position. You play linebacker, right?
Yep. At Siena, I played linebacker.
At Siena, you play linebacker. What'd you play at Lansing Sexton?
At Sexton, I actually played DN, and I was real undersized for my position. So that being recruited by Siena, it was a big accomplishment for me.
Now, we're definitely going to dive into the world of recruiting because I find it so fascinating. I mean, you saw me in our very beginning montage of the show talk about Michael Onwenu, who is, of course, the number one ranked player in high school football in the state of Michigan right now. He commits verbally to Michigan, right? And then, you know, Michigan State, of course, their line on both sides of the ball is going to be a bit depleted for next season. So Mark D'Antonio decides to offer him, and he puts on his Twitter, hey, you know, I'm blessed to announce that Michigan State has offered me a possibility to come out and join their program, when he already has committed at Michigan. What is the recruiting war like when you are a top high school football prospect or basketball prospect, just in that realm? And has it gotten a bit too serious over the years?
It has gotten a lot serious, especially with social media. Mm-hmm. Social media plays a big part in it now.
In what way?
It's just, they watch you, they keep a close eye on you for what you put on your social media. Mm-hmm. But far as the players, whatever, if someone commits somewhere, as long as it's not in writing, is fair game, basically.
Exactly. As long as that national letter of intent is not signed, yep. I mean, hey, you can sway like that. You can rock that boat a little bit. Now, for you, Jared, what was the recruiting war like for you when choosing what respective school you wanted to take your football talents?
To be honest with you, I didn't plan on playing college football.
You didn't?
Nope.
When was that decision made?
In high school, I was like a 5'9", 180-pound DN. Mm-hmm. So I knew most people get recruited in high school to go to college to play the position they already play.
Right.
So I kind of had it in mind there was no chance I was going to college to play DN. And then this coach from Siena comes in saying, we got a first-year team. We need some great players. So Coach B called us all down to the office, and we're talking to him. And I'm like, this would be great for me to keep playing football because I didn't plan on playing anymore. So Siena, they treated me real nice.
Now, was that the only offer you had coming out of high school?
It is.
So it was really a no-brainer to go there and pursue your education as well as play on the gridiron then. What was it like playing at Siena? Because when doing some research, and you and I were chatting before we took the air, Jared, Siena is very interesting when looking at its football program because it was a club program to start off and didn't become an official member of the NAIA, Division I College, Mid-States Football Association Midwest League. That's a mouthful, right? Until 2011. What was it like? Because you played on that very first team, going from a club team to an official D1 college program. I mean, what was that transition like?
It was a big transition and eye-opener for us. First of all, the pace of the game from high school to college is lightning speed. Mm-hmm. And then that we played club teams, so we played NCAA Division II teams, and we played D3 teams, and we also played their JV teams.
Okay.
So that first year, we went 9-1, so we were just thinking we were hot stuff, like, oh, man, this is...
9-1 the first year, and that was the year you guys won the Mid-States Football Association.
No, the 9-1 was our freshman year when we were a club team.
Oh, that's when you were a club team. Okay, gotcha.
So we went 9-1, so we're just thinking, oh, man, this college football stuff's going to be easy. And then the next year when we got into conference play, we actually went 4-6, and we lost... We lost three of those games in double or triple overtime by less than three.
Oh, my goodness. So those were really tight games. It's not like you guys are getting blown out the water here.
Yeah.
Now, you talk about that transition from high school football to college football, and everyone's big, everyone's fast. What was the toughest adjustment for you?
The toughest adjustment for college football, I would say, is having practice before class.
Hmm. Elaborate on that.
In high school, it was always a 3 o'clock practice, get out of school 2:30, 3 o'clock practice. In college, it may be a 5 a.m. practice. You still have four classes to go to after that. And then football is not done after your classes. Then you have the meetings after that.
Okay, gotcha. So your schedule was pretty hectic.
Yeah, it's pretty booked. Even in the off season, there's really no thing as a off season there.
Right.
So once your season gets over that first semester, you may have 1 or 2 weeks free. But as soon as you get back to school, that's when weight training starts. So that first Monday, you lift in there, and then meetings throughout the entire spring ball.
Now, again, you were a part of that very first team to win a league championship in football. And again, you were a part of that transition period. Jared, for you and your teammates and coaches all alike, what was that transition like as far as gaining the respect from other teams that looked at you as the new kid on the block, the new program joining this area of the NAIA? Because I'm pretty sure going from a club team to a D1 college program, that isn't a walk in the park.
It's not. And it was a lot of the coaches, they would talk to our head coach after the game, and he would, like, kind of tell us about their conversations. And they would all show us a lot of respect. They would show us a lot of respect, saying, you got a young team, you're next up. And that happened sophomore and junior year. And then it got to the point, by senior year, coach told us, like, I don't want to hear that anymore. We should be winning this. So when these guys tell me this, you got a good team there, they're on the rise, he like, yes, I know this is something you don't have to tell me. These guys are going to step it up.
No excuses, right?
Yeah.
What was it like winning a league title and being the first team to ever win a league title in school history?
It was very exciting. Going into that game, we were playing Robert Morris that game, and we had it was going to be a three-way tie if we had a loss, because us, Robert Morris, and Marion had all had one loss at the time. So if Robert Morris had to beat us, it would have been a three-way tie. But going into that game, we just knew, we knew we had to win in order to win out. So it was, I want to say, probably about halftime, we had probably went up like by 14 maybe, mm-hmm. and he just told us, keep your foot on the gas, like, it's not over yet. And then we went out and scored another touchdown that half, and you can just see their spirits kind of break being down after that.
And wow. What a remarkable game.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Now, okay, so we talked a little bit about your football career. I want to transition now into what you currently do. Of course, you are the assistant director of Aim High Sports Complex. Now, Jarrett, for any athlete who plays football, basketball, whatever sport it may be, and it's pretty good and goes to play at a Division I program, every athlete has that aspiration, or at least it has at least crossed their mind, his or her mind, of playing professionally at some level.
Yeah.
For you, when did it set in that, okay, the dream is packed away, career's done with as far as what I did athletically, mm-hmm. what do I do now with my life in the real world? When did that hit you, and how tough was that to come to grips with?
I would say the professional athlete aspect, that, like I said, that kind of set in for me in high school. And then,
early, right.
Yeah, playing college football, that was just a plus for me. And then finding out Sienna did have a degree that I wanted to pursue, that kind of helped me out a lot more. Mm-hmm. So by going there, doing the sport management thing, I knew, like, as the years went on there, I'm like, eventually football is going to be over. What am I going to do now? But being a sport management major there at Sienna, they actually require you to do a practicum and an internship. Mm-hmm. So that actually, it helps out a lot by doing an internship.
Why'd you go into sports management?
It was just, sports is something that I've always been around and something that I've always liked. So I figure it's no reason to go to college and try to change it up.
Now, you've certainly moved your way up quite well, the assistant director at AIM High Sports Complex. What was your work ethic like to maintain that position? Because you started as an intern, right?
Yep.
And then worked your way up to that. I mean, what is that experience like to lead to your current position?
Well, when I got there, I was just trying to find an internship somewhere. I contacted multiple places around the Lansing area, and AIM High was the one who actually responded to me and got back with me. So after talking with them, they like, all right, you can come in for an interview. So I went to an interview on spring break, and they was like, we'll be glad to have you. So my first week there after graduation, they were, I end up, because it's normally supposed to just be weekdays, but I end up working weekends too. Mm-hmm. So they had a front desk worker there with some issues with him. So she was like, are you going to be looking for a job after this? I'm like, yeah. She was like, all right, I can give you the front desk position, and you can still keep looking in the process. So I
All right, folks, we had to cut that current sports TV preview, or I should say recap of last night. Sit down with Jarrett Walker, who, of course, is the assistant director at AIM High Sports Complex. If you want to check out the full interview, just simply go to video.wkar.org to check out that episode and any episode in current sports TV's history. All right, well, quick reflection Friday here as we are approaching just a minute left in the show. I just have one. You know, it's barely been disturbing for me to watch what has occurred out in Flint, Michigan with the Flint water crisis. I have a lot of buddies that I went to college with who are from the Flint area, and it's just so disheartening to really just witness the population there going through what they've gone through for quite some time now. Long overdue that they are finally getting help, but it is encouraging that they are. So my thoughts are with those out in Flint. Keep the fight alive, folks, because just it's a really tough situation. So I just wanted to end the week on that. Isaac?
Yeah, Al, that's a fantastic one. I've heard about it for quite a while now, but only now is it getting national attention, and that's upsetting. For me, I'll just go, my Pelicans being your Pistons, I'm sorry. You know I had to bring that up, but not even close last night.
Right.
And then also, Zaza Pachulia, 14,000 votes away from being an all-star starter, and he's had a great season, in fact.
He definitely has. All right, folks, that wraps up the week here on WKAR's Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. Take care, have a great weekend, and be easy, people.